You are listening to Feminist Current. I'm Megan Murphy. I started this podcast over a decade ago in 2012. At the time, few were talking about the things I wanted to talk about. Feminists who were critical of third wave feminism, of the sex industry, of attempts to frame things like objectification and pornography as empowering, who wanted to focus on women's material realities, who were concerned about encroaching gender identity ideology and legislation, and who wanted to protect women's spaces, had not only been pushed out of mainstream media and conversation, but out of the modern feminist movement and the left. I wanted to provide a space for these conversations, a space for women who felt silenced or who didn't have access to legacy media or online platforms or funding to share their work, their activism, their views, and their realities. So I did. For over a decade, Feminist Current has been a lone voice of dissent in Canada. I've expanded my work to additional platforms, but Feminist Current remains a pivotal platform for and archive of women's work, movements, and dissenting voices. And we want to continue, but we really do need your help. Feminist Current has been ad-free, government grant-free, investor-free, wealthy benefactor-free, and fully independent for years. We rely solely on individual donors, so people like you, to sustain our work. Please consider signing up for a monthly or one-time donation by going to feministcurrent.com and clicking the Donate tab. It means the world and truly is the only thing that can keep us going. Thank you so much for supporting our work and women's speech. Last week, the Biden administration released new rules broadening the scope of Title IX, the 1972 law prohibiting sex discrimination in educational programs. The new rules add gender identity to the law, roll back regulations aimed at ensuring due process for those accused of sexual harassment or assault, and effectively demand the use of preferred pronouns, leading many to view the changes as nothing less than destruction of women's sex-based protections and right to compete on fair ground in sport in universities, as well as forcing people to refer to men identifying as women as she, and creating a system wherein anyone accused of harassment or assault can have their lives destroyed with little recourse. I spoke with Julie Hamill, a child advocate, lawyer, and Palos Verdes school board member, about these changes and the implications. Julie, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with me about what's going on.
Thank you for having me.
So, depending on the headline you read, last week, Biden either expanded Title IX protections for pregnancy, trans people, and sexual assault victims, or he defined sex out of existence under Title IX. Among other things that we can talk about also, but I think that was the main concern and controversy I was seeing among my Twitter follows in any case. Let's just start with the basics first. What is Title IX?
So Title IX is civil. It's a civil rights statute from the 70s that was designed to end sex discrimination in the context of education. So the whole purpose of Title IX was to give women rights equal to those of men in education. And I'm in the latter category of what you just described, because these new rules turn that on its head, because essentially, in essence, what they do is they change the definition of women really to include men. It doesn't literally do that, but if you look at Section 106.10 and 106.31, those include gender identity in sex discrimination explicitly. And so the result of that is essentially you have eliminated all protections for women, because now a man can call himself a woman and take advantage of all of this equal access that was once just reserved for women.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, it seems, what gender identity legislation accomplishes in general. I think that people, since these kinds of bills and these kinds of policy and law changes have been coming up since, you know, around, I guess, 2015, 2016 is when we started to see it kind of happening across the board in North America, I think. But, you know, I think that people think, okay, yeah, it's good to not discriminate. So let's add gender identity and gender expression to these laws and protections so that, you know, trans-identified people can't be discriminated against. But effectively, the result is that it nullifies women's rights. I think that most of us, I did in any case, understood Title IX as specifically a means to protect women's sports in high schools and colleges. How could this impact female athletes?
Well, I don't know where you're located. You're not in California, are you?
No, I'm actually Canadian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very different. Okay.
Yeah, so I only really learned about Title IX maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago or something like that.
Okay. Well, yes. So Title IX was supposed to create equal opportunity for women's sports, girls' sports and women's sports. But with these new definitions in 106.10 and 106.31A2, you're adding men who identify women into the category of women for protected classifications, essentially. And so you're ending this protected women's category of sports because you're allowing men to self-identify and join that category. And as we've seen in, we have many examples now in the United States of men who identify as women winning competitions, winning the NCAA swimming championship, winning all sorts of different things. And it's not fair. It's not safe in many contexts when you're talking about volleyball or basketball or, you know, contact sports. So really this rule, which shouldn't be allowed to stand because it completely exceeds the authority of the agency that promulgated it, this rule should not stand. I mean, it literally undoes, it's a 180 from the purpose of the statute, which legally the agency does not have the authority to do.
I think that you tweeted that this is actually an administrative agency rule and will likely be struck down as unconstitutional, exceeding the agency's legal authority and abuse of discretion. What does that mean? Do you think that these changes aren't going to stick or are not legitimate?
I do not think the changes are legal or legitimate. What needs to happen is that groups will sue and challenge this rule. And the challenges that they can bring are, number one, it's unconstitutional for a number of reasons. One of the main reasons that I can see is the First Amendment problem with compelling speech. So essentially they're telling institutions of education, so K through 12 and higher education, they're saying, you know, if you don't use someone's preferred pronouns, you have engaged in a Title IX violation of sex discrimination and harassment. And so that is compelling speech under the threat of getting federal dollars removed from your school. That's a problem. Secondly, it goes beyond the agency's legal authority. An agency does not have authority to change a statute. Their agency's authority is only to promulgate rules and regulations that interpret or help to sort of explain what a statute says. This is the opposite of that. It's undermining the purpose of the statute. And I think there are a number of other arguments that can be made, but those are the main two that I see potentially succeeding. Unfortunately, it's going to take a long time, and it's very difficult to challenge public agency rules. It's very, very difficult to sue the government and win.
So Riley Gaines, who I'm sure you know, is, you know, the swimmer who was forced to share her success with a male swimmer, Leah Thomas, and complained publicly about having to share a change room with a man. She's very brave. And she tweeted that, in a nutshell, the new rewrite means men can take academic and athletic scholarships from women. Men will have full access to bathrooms, locker rooms, etc. Men can be housed in dorm rooms with women. Students and faculty must compel their speech by requiring the use of preferred pronouns. If the guidelines above are ignored or even questioned, then you can be charged with harassment. Yeah, this just seems to me like a total sweeping back of all the rights that women fought for over so many years in terms of protections. It's just amazing to me how quickly all this work can be undone. Would you add anything to what she's saying? Do you think what she's saying is accurate? Is this what we're facing? Yeah.
She's exactly right. And unfortunately, you know, she's experienced it firsthand already. And in California, we have an education code section 221.5 that, I'm sorry, my dog is scratching at the door. That essentially already does this in California. So in California, we have to allow students to use the facilities that align with their gender identity, and we have to allow them to play on sports teams that align with their gender identity. Now, with this new Title IX rule, there are teeth added to that where, if this happens, there will be a Title IX investigation, which then, you know, triggers this kangaroo court procedure. And the school can get its federal funding taken away. So it's, you know, unfortunately, wild states like California are already sort of doing this. But this is going to spread now to all 50 states under Title IX.
This is crazy. I know that there's also been controversy around an update which would, this is how it was phrased in some media reports in any case, I'm hoping you can clarify, that this update now also offers full protection from all sex-based harassment, broadening the definition to include sexual violence and unwelcome sex-based conduct that creates a hostile environment by limiting or denying a person's ability to participate in or benefit from a school's education program or activity. USA Today, for example, reported that it's a sweeping update to how schools will have to handle sex discrimination and abuse cases. As I understand it, I think it undid what Betsy DeVos did, which was to narrow the definition of sexual harassment. Am I getting any of this right? Let's start with, what were the changes that were implemented during Trump's presidency in any case?
So in 2020, Betsy DeVos added a set of rules that enhanced due process, among other things. So I don't remember specifically exactly what she implemented in 2020, but I understand that now with these new rules, they've essentially wiped out all due process. So now there is no requirement for a written complaint. The complaint can be oral. There's no right to cross-examination. So essentially, a woman can come to an administrator and say, so-and-so raped me, and that's it. And a Title IX proceeding will have to take place. There is no opportunity or requirement that the man accused can cross-examine this person. There's no requirement for any sort of written documentation or written complaint. It's all based on whatever the woman says. And my assumption is that the Biden administration believes that this is them, you know, protecting and listening and believing all women and sort of following on this Me Too movement thing. Mm-hmm. But it's really dangerous and harmful to kids on both sides of the political aisle. And frankly, these kids aren't even political. They're just victims and pawns in this ridiculous game that the Biden administration is playing.
I mean, what do you think that is behind all these changes? I mean, do you think that they genuinely think that they're doing something good here?
My assumption, number one, it's very clear that they had trans rights activist groups write these rules. They're all the language of the transgender rights activists. My suspicion is that people like Biden and Cardona are not really paying attention and they don't understand. They say, they probably hear, okay, we're enhancing rights for trans kids, but they don't really understand that they're completely undermining the rights of women in the process, and they're putting women in harm's way, and they're taking away opportunities from women by doing this. And I think, frankly, the general public doesn't really understand that either, because everybody is so concerned with being called a transphobe or called a bigot or called a racist. Everyone is obsessed with protecting their image and making themselves appear to be this kind and compassionate person. And in so doing, they are causing harm. They're causing real significant harm.
Yeah, I mean, the changes around due process and, you know, accusing students of sexual assault, sexual harassment with little accountability or ability to push back against that. It's interesting because I had felt like there was a cultural shift that happened after the Me Too movement, where many of us understood that, you know, due process was important and that it was important not to just fling accusations, very serious accusations, around in public, particularly not, you know, anonymous accusations. It's obviously very difficult, to say the least, for women to come forward about sexual assault, rape, abuse, things like that. But at the same time, you know, there does have to be accountability on both ends, because the impact can have really, really, really serious repercussions for the person being accused. You know, in Canada, there was a well-known case of a man named Stephen Galloway, who was a professor at a university in Vancouver at UBC. And he was accused of something so vague. You know, I think he was accused of abuse, and nobody ever specified what the accusations were. And his whole life was destroyed. His career was destroyed. He's in the process of suing the accuser now. But, you know, no one asked questions. The media didn't ask questions. The university threw him under the bus. Feminists, of course, threw him under the bus, and anybody even who suggested that he deserved due process, you know, not even to defend him and say he didn't do anything, but, you know, he deserves due process, and, you know, you should at least have to say specifically what happened. The woman was allowed to stay anonymous throughout. So I feel like we learned some important lessons during Me Too that apparently the Biden administration didn't learn. At all.
No, I mean, you think about in America, we have a constitutional right to cross-examine someone who has accused us of a crime. And what Title IX is doing is it's totally eliminated due process, and it allows people to ruin the lives of other people on very thin evidence without giving that person any rights. I mean, if you get somebody kicked out of college, and I know someone who was kicked out of college after a Title IX kangaroo court, and it ruined his life. It ruins people's lives. And what really frightens me, and I hope that this is not true, and I hope that, you know, it's just me and my tinfoil hat, but the way that this is written and the consequences involved make me fearful that this is a strategy to take down people who don't align with the leftist ideology. So essentially what someone could do under these new rules is say, so-and-so is not using my preferred pronouns. This is pervasive sexual harassment. We need to kick them out of school. Title IX proceeding happens. Person is kicked out of school with no evidence. You know, they lose their upward mobility and their life is destroyed. What are they going to do to make a living? How are they going to, you know, if they can't go to college and they were kicked out on a Title IX violation, what's that going to do for their career prospects? So this is sort of, it's going to cause harm to people who are not ideologically aligned with the left. And I think that is incredibly dangerous and un-American.
Mm-hmm. The compelled speech factor is very concerning. I mean, this has been a trend over the past, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, maybe a bit more than that, wherein, you know, if you don't use so-called preferred pronouns, so for example, there's a male who wishes to identify as a woman and wants to be called she, her, it's in Canada, in any case, it's treated as though, and the government is doubling down on these rules and trying to further criminalize this in terms of online speech and making it very easy for people, for accusers to drag their, you know, these people who refuse to use preferred pronouns, for example, through human rights tribunals. And if Justin Trudeau succeeds in passing these new laws that he's interested in passing, they'll be able to make these accusations anonymously. But, you know, like treating this as some kind of hate crime, is that sort of similar to what's happening in terms of the changes under Title IX?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a crime. So these are not considered crimes. So no one's going to go to jail because of this. But the consequences are real and severe. You are ruining someone's ability to earn a living. You are destroying their college experience or even high school experience. You're destroying their upward mobility. But it's in terms of compelled speech. So we recently had a case come out of the United States Supreme Court called 303 Creative LLC versus Alenis. And that says very clearly that you cannot compel speech. And I don't think that these rules oh my God, I can't speak English right now. I can't think of regular words. It's not compatible with 303 Creative. This is compelled speech. And frankly, I don't discriminate against anyone. I don't discriminate against trans people, but I also do believe in biological reality and I believe in facts and truth. And I don't want to play a game and play into someone else's delusion of, you know, someone else believes that they're not the sex that they were born. That's great. They can do that. But I don't have to also believe that and say that to them. And it's my own political speech and my personal opinion. It's not harassment. It is my own belief system, and it doesn't comport with their belief system. Yet the government is now forcing all of us to align with this one very specific ideological belief system, and that is not what the First Amendment allows.
Right. I mean, one of the main problems with that view and this framing of preferred pronouns and refusal to go along with preferred pronouns as some form of harassment or hatred or bigotry is that, you know, it's people think of it as just being polite. Like, and so people who don't go along, so people who refer to men as he, regardless of how they identify, are being mean or cruel or hateful. And as you say, you know, my view is also like I don't want to lie. I don't think I'm against in principle lying. So referring to a man as a woman and calling him she or her would be referring to him as a woman. But it also has really serious repercussions. It's not really just about being polite. It has all these other repercussions, which I think we're seeing in terms of journalism, you know, when journalists are reporting on crimes, especially violent crimes, sexual abuse, domestic abuse, murder, crimes against children, for example. And I think that that's how we ended up in this place where we're rolling back women's rights, the rights of female athletes, for example, is just by going along and pretending that this is all just about being polite.
Exactly. Well, and then what's really sort of turned the tide for me, because I used to be one of those people who was just being polite and didn't want to like wade into the issue. But then I met detransitioners and I met parents of kids who were convinced in their middle school classes that they were the opposite sex and that they wanted to become the opposite sex. And these people underwent surgery and medical interventions that were incredibly harmful to them. And we're doing this to children in California, like lots of children. It's not just a one-off. It's multiple kids in every district are undergoing transition. And I don't know if you saw the Atlantic article that was just posted a couple of days ago, but it's so insane to me that they even decided to write something like this. But they compare gender transition to menopause for women. And the point of the article is that the menopause doctors can learn something from gender affirming care, which is a total misnomer and shouldn't be used. But that's what they argue. And so in response on Instagram, I said, if the effects of gender transition are like menopause, and as in the words of The Atlantic, they impact every part of the body from skin to brain to, you know, everything, should we be doing this to children? All of the Atlantic readers lost their minds on me in the comments. And I didn't fight with them. I just asked, you know, I'm asking a serious question. I didn't write the article. I didn't draw the analogy between gender transition and menopause. But if that's true, I think you should really think hard about what you're doing to children.
Yeah. The kids factory in all of this is among the most troubling, because as you say, it's happening to so many kids, and it's happening, you know, people are not thinking about the long-term consequences or even the short-term consequences, to be honest. And it's just amazing to me and totally reprehensible that anyone would think that it's acceptable to put kids on these puberty blockers or these hormones, never mind give them these surgeries. I mean, my heart breaks for the amount of people who are going to come out of this in 2 or 5 or 10 or 20 years, and their bodies are ruined, their lives are ruined. You know, they can't have normal relationships, they couldn't reproduce. And, you know, never mind all the other health consequences of having to take these drugs long term.
No, it's absolutely terrible. But, you know, getting back to the Title IX rule that we're discussing, I think if you've got listeners in the United States, there is a period right now where Congress can act. They can rescind this rule. So contact your congressperson and urge him or her to pass a resolution of disapproval. That can happen right now, and no litigation would be necessary. I don't have a lot of faith that our Congress will actually do the right thing, but I think there's a decent amount of attention on this issue. And what's really bothering me right now is I've seen a bunch of publications say, oh, you know, this doesn't impact sports. They're working on another set of rules that'll talk about athletics. I'm sorry, but that's complete BS. And I think that that's intentional to divert attention from this right now, because they don't want all of this negative attention on these rules. So don't believe the publications that are telling you this doesn't impact athletics. That is not true.
And what about, you know, there's an election coming up. What if, for example, Trump wins the election? Can he roll back these changes?
Yes.
Okay. So there is some hope. Do you think that it's worth it to try to educate these politicians, these congresspeople on the, I mean, it just, I'm so cynical about all of this. I have a hard time believing that these people genuinely think that, you know, I'm putting this in quotations, trans women are women. I mean, when we're talking about male athletes versus female athletes, it seems obvious to me that there are biological differences, and I'm hard-pressed to understand how anyone could deny that. But do you think that these people genuinely believe that if a boy, a young man, is identifying as a girl, he really is a girl? I mean, what's the motivation for going along with this?
I think that trans rights activists believe that. For the most part, I think members of Congress are just cowards. I think they are cowards and they are terrified of being labeled a bigot. And they won't say anything that could wind up with them getting a protest group of, you know, one of these activist organizations on their doorstep, because that's what happens. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what's happening on the ground, like, for example, there is a school district down here called Chino Valley that passed a parental notification policy that essentially requires the school district to notify parents if their kid goes by a new identity. So if they change their official or unofficial records at school, the district has to notify the parents. The state attorney general, Rob Bonta, sued the district. 25 trans rights activist groups joined the lawsuit as interveners. 25 groups. I've never seen anything like this in state court. There are so many organizations and there's so much money behind these efforts. It's really shocking. I don't understand it. I really don't understand why there's so much money behind essentially eliminating and erasing women. It's very strange to me.
I don't understand it either. I mean, these groups are so powerful. Like you say, these activists have managed to change laws across the board in a very short period of time. They have managed to control, you know, 95% of media outlets. They're obviously controlling politicians, institutions, academia, and women. You know, the women who've been fighting back since the beginning have been fighting back with nothing and have been blacklisted and censored and so on and so forth. And like you say, these groups just seem to have endless funding and support. I mean, do you have any idea why, where that's coming from and why they have so much power and why they've been able to gain so much power in such a short period of time?
I think part of it is this this sort of oppressive social movement that has created self-censorship on a mass scale. People are terrified to speak the truth because they don't want to be canceled. And therefore, we've got millions of people going along with a blatant, obvious lie because they don't want to be canceled. And that is a new phenomenon that I've only seen come about in the last, I don't know, 5 to 6 years. But I was also a total lib before before mm-hmm. COVID. And, you know, I've gone through my own awakening, and I was part of that sort of liberal hive mind before. And it took a while for me to break free of it. I permanently deactivated Facebook, and 6 months later, I found myself questioning all of these things that I used to believe wholeheartedly. And I think a lot of my perspective was being shaped by what I was reading on Facebook. And I think that is happening sort of on a mass scale, where people's perceptions are very much influenced and controlled by whatever social media or media they're consuming. And the media and social media is pushing a lot of these hardcore leftist ideas, and people are not, they either even aren't aware, or they are too afraid to break free of that sort of groupthink and speak the truth because they don't want to be canceled.
Yeah, I think there's so many people who've gone through what you went through, you know, particularly I think that COVID and what happened during that time woke a lot of people up to the fact that they shouldn't be trusting the media, they shouldn't be trusting the government, they shouldn't be trusting social media corporations. And yeah, I think part of it is what you say, people are very terrified of being canceled, they're terrified of being socially ostracized. And then also I think it's hard for some people to change their minds about things that they've believed for their whole lives and that they've, you know, organized around, you know, activists. If you've been doing activism in a certain direction on an ideological basis, on a political basis for decades, I can imagine that it would be very difficult to be like, oh, this was not true. This was not right. You know, I've been doing this wrong. But if you get offline and you talk to people in real life, I think that a lot of people have changed their minds and are waking up. Depending on where you are, I think that a lot of people that I know back in Vancouver are still stuck banging the drum for the same ideas that they have been unthinkingly for the past, you know, 5, 10, whatever years. So finally, I mean, what do you suggest in terms of organizing against these sweeping, very serious changes that will, you know, potentially ruin the lives and careers of countless students across America?
There are groups that are actively working on this right now. Independent Women's Forum, FIRE, the FIRE free speech organization. I believe that both of those groups are organizing to file suit against the government, and they are also organizing at state and local levels. So I encourage people to look up those organizations and see how they can get involved. I really do think reaching out to your congressperson and your senators, is a very important thing to do. Let them know that you're paying attention and you're upset about this, especially if you're on the left, because, you know, this idea that, this whole like transgender rights thing and, this idea that people are, you know, anti-LGBTQ or whatever, and it's all right wing, you know, Trumpy alt-right thing, is BS. It's not true. Mm-hmm. It's people from all across the political spectrum who want to protect women's and girls' rights and women's and girls' sports and their opportunities to get scholarships and to have privacy. It's not a partisan issue. Mm-hmm. It spans the entire spectrum. And I think we need to get rid of this notion that it's sort of a right-wing idea that women and girls' sports should be protected.
Yes, totally. I totally agree. Thank you so much. It was great to talk to you. It was great to talk to you about this. Thank you so much for clarifying everything for us. And I really appreciate your time and your work.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Great. Okay, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm Megan Murphy. Thanks for tuning in to Feminist Current. You can find us online at feministcurrent.com, tweet at us at feministcurrent, or send us an email at info@feministcurrent.com. We are hosted by Spotify, and you can subscribe to the Feminist Current podcast on all your favorite podcast apps. You can even give us 5 stars and a review on iTunes. Feminist Current is produced and hosted by myself, Megan Murphy. We have been ad-free, sponsorship-free, wealthy investor-free, government grant-free, and fully independent since 2012. If you enjoyed this podcast and value independent women's media, by women, for women, no compromises, please consider making a donation to support our work. Just visit feministcurrent.com and click the donate button.